I want you to meet my husband, and I want you to put him to work, because even if I must say so, he's a very brilliant man. He's very smart, and I want you to get him involved, and I will bring him to your third Sunday.
What were you doing at the time? Were you involved in health work or anyone at that point?
No. I'm just a housewife. But we had come out of New York, because where we had been involved in activities.
All of this was rather, this whole thing was rather loosely connected.
Mm-hmm.
He and I would sit down and talk as we're talking now about the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a third person was going. We were discussing the problems here, one after another. And even before we had a district committee organized, there was a spirit of our church to meet these problems back in the 30s. 38, 37, 36. And I had the idea of what I wanted to do. And Wilson came up with a picture. It offered us and I had the opportunity to expand beyond the realm of a church motivated group, although it never lost its identity with the church. It became sort of an independent group, separate from the church.
Were you a native of Los Angeles yourself?
Mm-hmm.
See, but you said that a couple of you met and sort of worked out the plan for, or the idea of the community, and then you called a mass meeting.
Yeah, well, all of this was not intentionally done. This was just an idea.
We had been working together on the dog boys home, stuff like that. We were taking ideas. And then all of a sudden, the California Department of Employment set out a statement that Negro women were not interested in the war work. Remember that?
Right.
And we did it on a Thursday or a Wednesday, and we had our meeting together, and we decided to call a mass meeting. And then at that mass meeting, we decided to go down to the California Department of Employment on a
mass scale.
That's how the committee got started.
Oh, so the two things were sort of happened simultaneously,
yeah,
in effect.
Yeah, we were doing self-help neighborhood style. If you needed you needed a place for the kids.
The child care.
So we'd work with that. Or you needed whatever. If you needed a job, we'd work for that. If you came to the city and you didn't have a job, we'd work with that. We were doing our Christian duty within the church. Then all of a sudden, with the insult of the Negro women, it created a vehicle, and by that we started using.
Because we weren't sure how you ended up getting focused on the women, but that explains it then in terms of the.
Yeah,
the department had said we made an agreement. Any time we ran into a case of discrimination, come see him, we straight it out. And when this order about Negro women was issued, it was supposed to be sort of a secret.
Yeah.
But we got wind of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't announce our mass meeting until Sunday morning on the radio that everyone who wanted the job, every woman who wanted the job, every man who wanted the job, every one who was against discrimination and anything, would meet us tonight at Hospital Galadia. So we had over 1,000 people there that night.
And that was the only announcement of the meeting was through the radio program.
Nothing was done, the newspaper, anything, because we didn't want them to know what we were planning. So the following Monday morning is when we marked, each person was supposed to contact as many people as possible and school them what to do and what to say and what not to do, old and young. These the 11th and Flower. So it was 3,000. That meant that when we tied up traffic, when I went upstairs, the gentleman who was head of the department said, Reverend, I told you to let us know if you had a problem. And we would take care of the situation because I said, well, you stated that there wasn't there, that people who were going to have to produce a reservoir. Welcome, so we have the ocean downstairs. That's when it began over the issue of Negro women. We weren't supposed to know about it.
Up until that time, you've basically been fighting sort of individual case by case once the executive order came down?
No, the executive order has not come down. It came down later. We were doing our Christian duty, whatever was necessary. People come to us and ask us, we don't have any food, or we don't have places to live. We don't. So we were doing it on a, what do you say, individualistic.
And we were paying a man through the church,
$200
a month
to do nothing but help with these cases.
So it's almost like a social worker that the church.
Place the people to run all of the channels that were available, work with the travelers in, send some back, take out some here, and work full time. But the trade union had a, finally they had a way of firing the last tire, so 200-300 of them came down one morning.
What was your relationship with the, because you talked, you mentioned several times the problems with labor. What was your relationship with the CIO and their anti-discrimination committee?
The same problem. You see, it's good to have, what do you say, speakers. But when it comes down to the ritual of reality. We had a good relationship. Basically, we had one of the most progressive relationships at that time, you see. You could call Slim Connolly, and you could talk to him, you'd try to do something, but you had to get beyond the rhetoric, you see. And that meant putting the guys to work. And they were having a great deal of difficulty with industry. And they were having personal difficulties. So, a man is what he has been taught. And he was having, well, CIO was having difficulty getting people to make change. But we had a very good relationship until Len Russell
ran for council.
Ran for supervisor. Then we were summoned by Slim Connolly to come down to his office. And
boy Slim and I and you and really had a real sense of.
What year was
word,
that?
The first word you wanted to know was, "You tell told you to run." And we had been, oh God, we had we had, we were the only church that opened our door to labor. We had, who did I have north? We had him down. But I'm talking about the long show.
Oh, Harry Bridges?
Harry Bridges down. We had the real And even, you know, in the Negro community, that was really CIO.
Mm-hmm. Now, was there CIO representation at all on the Victory Committee?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Walter Williams.
Uh-huh. Oh, he was from the CIO. He was in the CIO.
Yeah.
He was an organizer for the CIO.
He was one of the CIO organizers, and he was tied to one of the unions, directly one of the CIO unions.
He was a CIO,
a field representative.
Officially.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, he was the only black representative at that time.
Uh-huh.
And then, was that before he was...
Oh, the AFL was involved?
Oh, gosh. We had a real tight organization the way we won the fight. I mean, the railway company, the old Los Angeles railway company, to support finally after. I mean, our church put up $600,000 to underwrite a meeting at the Biltmore. Mayor Bowen had said, "Well, we could sell this thing if we had somebody to underwrite a meeting." I thought that would be the thing, but I said, "Okay, I'll underwrite it." So we underwrote the meeting, and at this particular meeting, the mayor asked for 30 days. And so we gave him 30 days, and then he acted. And the AFL wanted a raise, it wasn't a salary raise. They wanted to, and we agreed to work with them for an increase in salary if they would accept a grade of about 8802, and so they agreed.
Oh.
And that's how we worked that out with them. So at the meeting, the next meeting, Harris was president of the Los Angeles Railway Company. AFL was there. Nunn, I think, was a water management commissioner, manpower commissioner out here. He was at the meeting, all of us were at the meeting, but Nunn called me, he was asking me. And of course, I don't care to be quoted on this, but a certain Negro organization said it won't work. And he said, "Well, you come a little early into my office," and in walks this person. He said, "It won't work, because labor won't support it." But I had already received a commitment. Labor would support it. So at the general meeting, we'd go along with it, but the labor, here he is. He said, "Well, let's go with him." I said, "Yeah, well." So he went with it. He said, "Well, a little humorous," said, I'm not gonna have ladies colored men and Negroes going to the same toilet at the end with my white women working on the street. I said, "Well, your nation is your business. Transportation is ours." So we won that fight, except we had to pick up the people and carry them there to make sure that they reported.
Mm-hmm.
The little company. Now that
the AFL did work with us finally, but even more so after the CIO began working with us, and they opened up more.
Well, were you directly involved in the attempt to get the black workers into the IAM, for instance, out after Lockheed signed with the IAM, and there was a big fight because the International Association of Machinists had a white-only clause. Were you involved in that struggle?
You were
black women into Lockheed and North America.
Those are the two key places where the black women went into, you think?
Oh, no.
Well, aircraft, because they had training classes and whatnot in aircraft. You know, North American had this special training. And a lot of the women went through that training, and then I went myself through that training, and then into the plant.
You worked in the plant?
Mm-hmm.
Well, why didn't you call us? Well, how did the, after the, that mass, the mass meeting and then the march on the employment office, what was the next, out of that grew the total larger committee then, in other words, from that action?
No. We had this mass meeting, and we had the meeting downtown. But we continued as an organization. There would be other mass meetings, you see, depending upon what had happened. And,
say, the 10 points that night they went?
Yeah.
For example, there was a quota basis for housing for wall workers. And they would condemn an area, build housing and rent it to war workers on the basis of the population that occupied it before it was condemned. So consequently, it was always more white, and there would be vacancies in the what they call quota restriction. And that's when we first went into to that fight against the quota restrictions, that they would be, wall workers would be sold houses on the basis of need rather than on the basis of race. That was one of and we carried this from church to church, and finally met with about 11 contractors, and that was the climax of the fight. We won that fight. And eliminating quota restrictions for wall workers. Right, Will?
Mm-hmm.
And that was before, naturally before,
And you see, we also had another fight. When they had, who was that? The plumbers or somebody?
Boilermakers?
Huh?
The boilermakers.
That was another fight.
Yeah.
Where they had the Jim Crow trade union. And that was a fight that was spearheaded by Walter Williams. And we were behind them. And the unfortunate situation, they come into a minority community, and they come into a majority community, and they get somebody who sides with them. Because they're so inexperienced with what the progressive thing should be that they stand back with the status quo and say it can't be done. And when they say it can't be done, then there's a problem for those who want to go to war.
Well, I'll be talking about that. It occurred to me that following some of these things are not stated in context as far as continuity. But following the meeting and the march on USES and the subsequent meetings, in the telegrams to President Roosevelt, wanting by Commissioner McNutt, sending in the congressman, let them all know what you were going to do. What had been done, rather, President Roosevelt sent a committee to the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel to meet with us for the final decision on discrimination, and then it should do USCIS and CSCS, and there they were given the his committee, three tough men that came out here, laid down the law at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, and that meant no more discrimination, CSCS or USCS. And in that same vein, we worked with the armed forces also, from Portland, Maine to San Diego. When they had cases, and also from San Bernardino up in Apple Valley. I can't think of the name of the little town.
Victorville?
Yeah, they came here all the way from Victorville, from San Diego, from Portland, Maine, and the surrounding areas, reporting to us the cases. They had learned of it in the armed services. So if one was put in a brief for not signing the brief, they said, get in touch with the victim committee, get in touch with Russell, get in touch with Wilson. They sent them right here. And we were the underground.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I met a fellow after I got out of the army when I was taking the teacher to care. And we began to talk. So, you know, he take an exam, I'm taking an exam. He's a newcomer, doesn't know where to go. He told me that when he hit California on the border, people, Negro people would say, where are you going? He said, going to Los Angeles. Well, listen, if you go to Los Angeles, see Reverend Russell on the picture convention, but he is really, well, he came in, he got the, but this was happening by the, what do you call it, the
grapevine.
People began to hear.
He stirred up something else. The CDs.
Yeah.
That was our most famous case of an infamous action. CDs were in Portland, Maine, and the commander was a very suave, handsome white gentleman from Mississippi. And he told them that, that they were ready to embark, that he would never promote a nigger. He sent a representation down here, got in touch with us, and Mrs. Bass and Mrs. Forney rode with me to Portland, Maine, and the chaplain, who was white, had arranged a meeting with the commander and my committee. These CBs were all black. And I told him what he had said. I said, no, I'm not trying to run your man. He said, oh, Reverend, please tell me who these boys are, because I love these boys and they love me. And I said, well, I can't tell you that. And I said, but we want them to go overseas happy, feeling that they can be promoted and that they will not be subjected to embarrassments and abuse. So to make a long story short, we had about an hour's discussion. And I came back. And to show you the power of the committee at that time, again, we wired the naval intelligence, army intelligence, President Roosevelt, and McNutt. And the following Sunday, I was in the pulpit, and they asked me, could I step outside for a phone call from Washington. No, and then we're here from Washington. And they wanted to know, and I'd like us to contact Mrs. Bass, John Doe, Jane Doe, we go, yes. And to leave us tomorrow at such and such a place, at such and such a hotel, at such and such a time, can you make it? We'll be there. We met the women and the men at the meeting. And that was on Monday. And in less than 10 days, this commander was booking dismissed. They got a new commander. Went overseas happy. And I saw one about 2 years ago. One of the CBs lived in Compton. He just died about a year ago. And this was in 1943. And as a matter of fact, the black soldiers from these areas came to my church, our church, I should say, once per month for Holy Communion. Sometimes it would be 100 or 200 in a company.
Mm-hmm.
We'd all take the communion together before going overseas. Mm-hmm. So we have blue and beige testaments. We would give the navy the blue, you know, the beige with the church name stamped in the back of it.
Hmm.
And Walter Winchell, you remember?
Mm-hmm.
One of his broadcasts said that there were four boys rescued on the high seas. He said they'd been blown up. And for days, only comfort they had was reading the 23rd Psalm from the book presented by the people's independent church of Christ, Los Angeles, John Wilson, Minnesota. And that was the something you never forgot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And whereas it was the church, there was still the victory for me, mm-hmm. because you were the ones who rounded up these boys in these various parts. And anytime a captain, a lieutenant, was white, and he would bring his whole black command to the church and ask us to send him books and things for the boys. We knew he was interested in
mm-hmm.
their welfare, and that was the procedure we followed. So we even reached into the armchair.
Yeah, so it wasn't just the industrial force then.
It was basically that the problem of the community.
Mm-hmm.
There's something. It's just like this. When I got word of the Jeep riot, I got you and Mrs. Bass and the president of the NAACP to go down 12th Street and stop whatever was happening.
Mm-hmm.
You remember?
Well, even beyond that, it had been an NAACP meeting. You call us and Mrs. Bass and I rode through because you my area
mm-hmm.
that night alone and came back. We saw what was happening. Mm-hmm. We came back and Wilson to call the next day and have the Negro area declared out of bounds.
Yeah, that's
for sales.
Uh-huh.
Somebody came and told me, boy, there's going to be a lot of something down here. So,
mm-hmm.
to the black community next.
I see. Let me see.
If you weren't black, then
no.